Hey there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 369. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, send an email on over to ken@thisshowisogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is thisshowisogay. And of course, go on over to that Facebook. Type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. We have such a fun show for you this week. We must get started. Here's the backstory. For the past 5 years, we have had just a blast having actor, producer, MC, philanthropist Will Clark on our show. Well, 2.5 years ago, Will broke the news that the end of the artist known as Will Clark was near, and by golly, it's time to check in with him to see how that's going. Just to remind you listeners, Will Clark is a 20-year veteran of the erotic entertainment industry. He's appeared in 48 films. He has produced 457 editions of The Will Clark Show featuring porno bingo, as well as hundreds of other events raising funds for LGBT charities, which all said and done have raised over $250,000. Over his career, he has been recognized with the Leo Ford Humanitarian Award and the Special Award for Achievement in AIDS Fundraising. His website was recognized as the Best Web Presence by Men in Video Awards. He's also been honored by the New York Gay and Lesbian Anti-Violence Project, United for the Ride, and he was knighted by New York's Imperial Court. Now he is back with us. Will Clark, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Hello. Hello, Show Is So Gay. I am still so gay.
I wanted to just check because it has been 2.5 years since you've been on the show. You are indeed still so gay, right?
Oh, I am so gay, and my boyfriend can validate that in several different ways.
We'd like to remind our listeners that Will Clark's boyfriend will be on next week's episode of This Show Is So Gay, where we will confirm that. Very exciting. We have so much ground to cover, sir. Are you ready?
I am ready. I am absolutely ready.
Can we do a little Will Clark, This Is Your Life? I was listening to old episodes, and we need to get back to the backstory. And this is
okay,
this
cool.
is what I know. This is what I know for sure, I think.
Okay.
You were 29 years old, and you were offered an opportunity to dance at a bar called South Dakota.
I was 30.
You were 30.
Very close.
Very close.
30 and a half.
Okay. Tell everybody about that famous club, South Dakota.
Well, it was like this little dive bar on the east side of Manhattan. It was like somewhere in like the 30s. I don't remember exactly the address, like 36 and, you know, like Madison or some, you know. And it was like, you know, it was kind of rickety and kind of the cool bar that New York used to have a lot of and just doesn't have it much anymore of. And at the time, I was, as I am in now, a little bit of an unemployment time. And so, you know, it's sort of a reoccurring theme in my life. It's lovely. And at the time, I was working for a photographer, this wonderful photographer. Oh, he was just terrific. He lived on the Upper West Side, and I met him at a Halloween party, and he, you know, was like, I need an assistant. I said, oh, I need to work. And his name is Russell Maynor. He's just fantastic. You can look him up. M-A-Y-N-O-R, Russell Maynor. He's down in Florida now somewhere. He's been lost in the bowels. He's been claimed by Florida. But at the time, I worked for his assistant for a couple months, and I'd never worked as an assistant before, so I kind of was just sort of like doing whatever. And like things like, you know, painting his hallway and, you know, getting his dry cleaning. It was so professional and awesome. And at one point, I came back after actually picking up his dry cleaning, and you know, by the way, I'm just joking. He's really wonderful, and it was great work, and I'm so grateful to have had that experience. But I walk in, and it's the night before Thanksgiving. It's, you know, Thanksgiving Eve. It could be like, you know, a new carol, and the and he turns to me, and he's with a client who was shaved head and like had ears like Spock, and I looked like an alien. And they turned to me and they said, you know, how would you like to make $100? And I said, sure. What do I have to do? You notice I agreed.
Before you asked, that's an interesting tactic. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So then they were like, well, you just have to go for a couple of hours, you know, on a box. And it's like a half an hour at a time. And well, okay, I'd probably be going there anyway and I'd be paying. So this is a win. So I went and had a good time. Then they asked me back. And then I did it again. And then they went off into their whatever, the other schedule with the other dancers. And then Mark Berkley, who was promoter at the time, the big promoter at the time, you know, I did that thing where you just go like, well, I'm going to start at the top and work my way down. So I went to Mark Berkley because he was the biggest promoter at the time, and I went to his office, and his office manager was a redhead and a couple years younger than me, and was like, oh, you're like Casper. And I'm like, okay, that's mean coming from another redhead, because we're all Casper if we've got redhead. But they hired me immediately, and I worked for months. And actually, that job got me into the adult video market, because Mark Berkley at one point suggested, in a very series of circumstances, which I won't repeat, for a sort of PG-13 radio show.
That's us, yeah.
That perhaps I could make more money if I was making adult films. And I was like, you're crazy. Who would ever hire me? Well, you know, and then a bunch of people hired me. So I, you know, it kind of turned out that he was right. So that was kind of awesome. So, yeah, so that one simple moment of, hey, you want to make $100, turned into a 21-year career.
Look at that. The adult entertainment industry, I have to tell you, look, this is episode number 369, and we won't get into that irony.
Yeah,
I am sure there's all sorts of irony there, but it's not something that's come up a lot on the show, and I wonder, as you have progressed through your career, I would assume that you have encountered just a range of reactions when you speak to all sorts of individuals in your life that you have been so immersed in that entertainment industry.
Oh, that's really a great question. And the answer is absolutely yes. And nothing more encapsulated the diversity of reactions more than a story, which I will share with you, which I've actually not told anybody, like, other than my boyfriend, because it literally just happened like 3 weeks ago. So nobody has heard the story. I haven't blogged about it. I think I put a little on my Whoops Arc Facebook, but here's a pristine news story. So I grew up in a small town in Wisconsin, right? And I have a brother and sister, both older, and I did a lot of theater when I was growing up. And there's this one woman who was a couple years older than me who I've stayed friends with since my high school days. In fact, her husband was a guy, another redhead, that I actually was in a community theater production with when I was in high school. Just like bizarrely coincidence, right? And so we chat a lot, you know, online. And she's been to New York a couple times, and once we met up for lunch. And she works with a choir group and for high school students. And at one point, a few times they brought the high school group to sing at Carnegie Hall. Right. So it's like a big deal. Like, and it's a cool thing. Right. So at one point, so first of all, like a few weeks ago, I put out on my Facebook, I'm like, oh, I'm a little bummed out. And I'm like, oh, you know, now that this person has died, that person has died. Well, I hope we're all just following our real bliss. I hope that, you know, whatever you're doing in your life, that it brings you joy and it brings you happiness. And I really just put it out there because I had gone that morning to my favorite French bakery in my neighborhood, and I hadn't been for a couple of weeks, and I found out that the guy who ran the bakery had died of a heart attack 2 weeks before, like out of the blue, like mid-40s, you know, like I'm sure he wasn't in great health, you know, being, you know, a baker and everything.
Right.
But, you know, not old at all, right? So I was kind of bummed. So I put this on my Facebook, and Julie responded with this girl, Julie, she responded with this note. She said, I want you to know that I've known about Will Clark for a long time and how, you know, great it is that you also do all this fundraising stuff. And we don't care, my husband and I don't care at all, and, you know, whatever. So I got her on the phone, and we were talking, and I said, well, how did you find out? Like, hoping she wasn't going to say, oh, we popped in a movie and there you were. Because that would raise all sorts of really awkward and strange questions.
Yes,
right?
It would.
So then she said, oh, well, your sister and their friends, your sister was like, because she was gonna come here, and she said, well, I'll call him and we'll, you know, hang out. And she said, my sister's like, oh, no, well, if you call him, make sure that you don't, you know, when you're with him, make sure that there are no kids around at all. And when I'm listening to her, I'm thinking, well, I see, you know, because she said that he's like, well, you know, he's done movies and you shouldn't have any kids around. And I was like, well, but I'm not a sex offender. There's no Amber Alert if I walk through a neighborhood, you know, anything. That's when I was that age, I was not into guys. I've never been interested in guys that age. And that's just ooky and weird and creepy. But, you know, like, so it's pretty much the two, like, either, like, oh, I don't really care and it doesn't impact me at all. And that's mostly, like, my straight friends, you know, who know me, who I've known for most of my life or whatever. And then, like, some sort of, like, weird, you know, oh, my God, you know, hide the kids and hide the dog. Oh, my God, you know. There is a third reaction, which is, you know, sort of prurient interest. And the prurient interest is basically when they ask about it, and it's like you're in an interview situation where you're answering a bunch of questions, and you realize once I finish answering the questions, they have no interest in me. Like, that will be where the interest dies.
Right.
And I've been on a lot of dates like that. So that's always been, you know, slightly awkward. But, you know, thank God for the third of people who are, like, totally, like, whatever, who cares? You know, like, oh, that's fun. Oh, that's interesting. Now pass the potatoes. I mean, you know, that's a great thing, right?
Yeah. You know, there's also, I have to tell you, as a researcher, because that's what I do when I'm not hosting this show, and I focus so much of my efforts on health and wellness, I'm also interested in that aspect, and I guess I haven't heard it talked about it a lot lately. I know a few years ago, there were a lot of conversations happening in and around the adult entertainment industry about depression, anxiety and depression, because it seemed like, and you're more in a position to speak to this clearly than I am, that there were some high-profile suicides of some people in the industry. And then it didn't seem like maybe that conversation went as far as it should have gone. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think that's really fair. And this kind of thing kind of keeps coming up. It's again, as somebody who's been around for 20 years and spent the first 10 of those years lodged in, you know, firmly in the West Hollywood culture, which at the time was sort of 90% of porn. You know, like, it was like the social aspect of it. It was most of the movies. I mean, obviously there was a big San Francisco contingent with Hot House and Raging Stallion and Falcon, but it almost felt like those were sort of weirdly disconnected. Like, those were like the suburb offices, but the main thing was West Hollywood, with Shishi's company and a bunch of others, you know, and it was from a little bit of a different era. It's a bit of a transition time. Now they're all sort of like small or gone away, or they don't exist anymore. And it's a whole different thing. But so the first 10 years, I was really in the midst of that. And there's always somebody crusading about, you know, we should do unions and there should be unions for adult video actors. But, I mean, it just raises a whole bunch of questions. For example, you know, this is mostly an industry where people, other than the people who are making it, like a Shishi or, you know, a Chris Ward at Brayton Stallion, you know, this is an industry for people who need an extra dollar to stay alive, or they need an extra dollar to pay off their student loans. And there's very, very, very few of us who did it not needing either of those criteria, but just was like, oh, this is fun. Let me try this. Oh, I have some success. Let me stick around. And those people like me usually are like people like Chris Ward, who started out as a performer and then became, you know, director, producer, studio owner. And there's really not that many of those people, if I can include myself in on that.
Yeah.
And you find with those people, they've made a conscious decision. I mean, like, this is what Shishi always wanted to do. This is her vocation. This isn't something that she's doing until she becomes a quote unquote real director.
Right.
And there's actually directors that I would meet that'd be like, oh, you know, I'm just doing this until I get my big break. And, you know, Shishi was like, no, this is my break. This is what I'm doing. And the reason I go into all of that is that there was people always trying to do unions, and you can't do a union, and you can't do health insurance, and you can't do any kind of organizational thing where people who come in and residuals, you can't do that. The bookkeeping on that is a nightmare. Like, there's no studio and no organization in place that's going to say, okay, so Johnny Smith, you know, did a movie back in 1999, and he gets residual check of 10 cents, where am I sending that?
Right.
Because the guy's either, you know, living in a box or changes his name three times or is in jail or, you know, like, that's not the only option, but that's, you know, there's a big group of people. One of the other things that in 2000, I was very outspoken about unsafe sex in porn. I was outspoken against unsafe sex, a depiction, a portrayal of unsafe sex in movies. And so, you know, and it really raised a lot of, like, questions with people, and people were like, you know. Well, one of the things with me my eyes were opened about was when people would say that would reveal to me, this is all they have.
Right.
They don't have a family to go back to. They don't have a home to go back to. They don't have money in an IRA somewhere. They're not going to get an office job. You know, no one's going to hire him to do that. They did this as, this may buy me some drugs and a few more years of life, but that's about it. A lot of these guys didn't expect to be 40 or to be 30, 40, 50, certainly are not looking at 60. Now, there's a group of people that I'm friends with still that are committed to, this is my life, and I'm, you know, that was a fun thing, and that was my last job, but now I have my new job, and someday I'll have another job. And it's a stop on the way, not the end of the way. So I think one of the big contributing factors to the suicides, and what was really scary and sad about it, was a lot of guys that had joined the industry, and I really didn't know them that well. Some of them lived here in New York, and I didn't really know them, and I didn't have any connection, because I was, at the time, the only thing that they knew me as is just, like, the porno bingo guy. Like, they didn't have any, you know, or, like, here's that old guy in his 40s who did porn a million years ago and nobody cares about him. But, you know, so I wasn't, like, super friends with them, so I don't really know what was going on in their head. But what I did notice in the trend when we're talking about, like, Arpod and Ragazzi and a couple other people, these are people who are of a certain age and are getting older and are still fantastic, but are also people who can't go back to their home country, and they're probably here illegally to begin with, and they can't go home, and they can't get a real job, and at some point they can't escort or you know, train as a personal trainer anymore. Now, again, I'm totally, like, just taking some things that I feel and extrapolating and assigning to these guys, but I kind of feel that there's a part of that that's very true. And, you know, there was a couple guys who just, you know, was it a suicide? Was it an overdose?
Right.
You know, was there a client there? Was there, you know, like, nobody will know. Again, there's just nothing, there's nothing one can do to change it anyway. There was a rumor going around at one point, which really scared the living crap out of me, which was a rumor that if these were not suicides, that they were, since they were all escorts, that there was a client going around and killing them. And, like, and that was, like, super scary, like, oh, my God, that's like the guy, the third shooter on the Knoll,
right,
you know, rumor of the gay community. And, you know, that one really was like, oh, that's too even scary to even contemplate, because that's horrible. But, you know, it's really sad that there's no support system, and people blame the studios. But the reality is, again, the studio is there to make movies. They're not there to be, they're not big enough or profitable enough in the larger sense where they have an HR department, you know, like as if you worked at Cisco Systems, you know, where you'd be like, oh, I'm having some problems with depression. Okay, great. You go to HR and you go talk to them, and they get you, you know, they process your health claim, and then you go and you go get a therapist. That doesn't exist. You know, this is a freelance. It's like every actor or singer or painter or ballet person that doesn't belong to a company. I mean, you know, that's just how this is, and that sucks. But there's nothing, you know, like, nobody has figured out a solution. I certainly haven't. I don't know anybody else that has. Hopefully we take care of the guys enough where they decide to take care of themselves.
I feel like you're announcing on this show right now the creation of the Will Clark HR agency. I feel
right.
We just established it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Well, you know, honestly, I've said for years, actually, and I mean this, I'm going to say this a little funny, but I think it's serious. I think I'm serious, but, like, if I won the lottery, one of the things I've always on my list, you know, because you always have your list of what you win on the lottery, what you'll do if you win the lottery, right? I know I do. I'm sure you do. So one of my things on my list would be to, like, have some sort of counseling service as part of, like, a gay and lesbian center in L.A. or in New York and or in San Francisco, which is kind of the three epicenters of, like, where guys mostly live, maybe Fort Lauderdale and Chicago. You know, either a guy in staff or a guy part-time or a guy or somebody, you know, half-time or something like that, or by appointment only, where, you know, guys who are in the industry can drop in and get some career advice and maybe even, you know, work on those skills. I think it's still in business under another name, but Magnet in San Francisco, which is an HIV AIDS testing and services organization, and it was fabulous, and now it's called Strut, And they've been around for about 12 years. They're amazing. They're amazing. They're amazing. Let me just say again, they're amazing. So if you have a listener who's in the Bay Area and really is really struggling with, especially with HIV and really trying to get back to work, go to Strut because they can really help you. Now, they have reorganized the business in the last year. So they're relocated. They're still in the Castro, and they do amazing things. And I'm sure that there's services and things to do with the Gay and Lesbian Center, both in L.A. and New York. But yet, you know, part of the problem is there's no person dedicated to getting out there and talking to these guys through their work one-on-one and say, when you need it, give me a call.
Right.
You know, and 5 years down the line, they say, hi, you gave me your card 5 years ago. I don't want to f*** you. I just really need a job.
Yeah.
You know, can you help me? Can you help me? So I want to get out of an SRO. I want to get off of heroin. I want to get off of personal meth. Great. Awesome. Okay. Well, I'll do what I can. So, you know, but unfortunately, until I sort of win the lottery, that's not something that I can do. But, you know, and again, you know, there's always the question of like, well, would that actually really help?
I mean, right.
Can you help people? So, I don't know. Oh, sorry. That's kind of a little bummer of a conversation.
No, I remember when that was all, when it hit the news briefly, and I just felt like it was so briefly because there were individuals in the gay community who it felt like it was shame-based to even share those stories on Facebook, on social media, when in fact it was indicative that there's clearly an issue here that we need to be talking about, but because we have such a difficult time talking about sex, period, much less the adult entertainment industry, the attention just wasn't there like it should have been. So no, I'm okay with it being a little bit of a downer. We have work to do. I'm all about
Well, if you want to know, if any of your listeners want to know right now, they don't have to do a search. They don't have to go to Google. All you have to do is go to your Facebook page. You want to know what the attitude, what people really, really, really think, and what, you know, how that impacts people like myself. Go to your Facebook page and look for articles about the, you know, quote-unquote controversy, which I'm rolling my eyes because it's very tired, about the Lance Bass dating show
right. Where
the quote-unquote bachelor is a former sex worker.
Right.
So, A, he's like, oh, it happened in my 20s. Okay, people are saying, no, girl, you had a profile up as recent as Jim.
Right.
So, first of all, the guy is shamed. The guy is ashamed of his own work, which is very sad. I'm like, own it and enjoy it. Second, all the catcalls that people are making about him and about that past and are really tired. I thought we had kind of gotten a little past this, and I'm kind of embarrassed that, you know, some people that I know are still, you know, all catty, weird, and bitchy about sex work. But it's really tired. And it's as tired as last year when everybody was making the very depressing statements about Caitlyn Jenner.
Right.
You know, oh, a man in a dress. No, she's actually a she. Calm down.
Right.
And why do we need the tea anyway? You know, why are they part of our community? I was a little like, are you kidding me?
Still happening. Still so, absolutely
yeah, still happening.
Happening. Oh, my gosh.
So much work to do.
I cannot believe how much time I waste on Twitter because I really think that I'm going to change people's minds of these folks who endorse the drop the tea move. It's just ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. All right. We're moving on to happier things. Happier things.
Sure,
well, let's see. Let's see if they're happier things. I'm not quite sure. We're going to find out. You were on the show 2.5 years ago. You broke the news with us.
It was crazy.
It was crazy. The imminent end of Will Clark. And here we are, and I'm still introducing Will Clark on my show, and I'm not sad about that. I'm in no way sad about that. But I know that from what I've been able to gather online and the noise that you just made, I'm thinking, okay, there were these goodbye parties that were going to happen, but then they didn't happen for whatever reasons. It's all good. It's all good. Talk to me about where you're at now, because I love the fact that you have evidence of two completely different hashtags. One, the end of Will Clark, and another one, hashtag Will Lives. Where are you, sir? Where are you?
Where am I? Well, I'm in my bedroom right now.
Nice.
I'm waiting for you, Ken. Come on. Get out of here. Get your boyfriend. Come on. You know I wanted you. As you said, I had in February of 2014, I did the final bingo, which was amazing. And if anybody, you know, is bored and, you know, just wants to watch some old guy be talked about very nicely, you can go to YouTube and look at Will Clark 50, like, you know, Will Clark 50. And, you know, well, that should bring up some things from my final bingo. We had somebody who organizes a South Africa AIDS ride. His first name is Brian. He's a filmmaker.
Wait, I got to stop you right there. Do you know that Brian and I were in grad school together? That's how small this world is.
I did forget about that. I did forget about that. So he's in Harold. He's working in, like, Shanghai or some crazy place like that, or Taiwan. I don't know where he's, like, hoping. So he was very gracious, and he filmed the night, and he put some stuff up online, so you can go check out that. Some people said it's a very nice thing. And at the time, I was working a corporate job as an event manager for a big bank. And it was a lovely job, although incredibly stressful. But, you know, it was like, ooh, I'm making a living like an adult. Woohoo! I love that. Wow, fun. And, but, you know, I just didn't have time for bingo, and I just kind of needed to put Will away. So then the bank merged with another bank, and all hell broke loose. And the rest of 2014 was not so great, and the rest of all of 2015 was really, really stinky, just for the job stuff. And along the way, I actually did another 13 bingos in 2015, which I called the victory lap. So actually, when you said that there were 457, there's actually 470.
Look at that. I like rounding up anyway.
And by the way, just as a little, you know, just about to toot my own horn, but bingo alone has raised $250,000. My other event together have raised well over $1 million just in cash, and that's not counting donations and time and product and everything.
Incredible.
Just, you know. Anyway, I did the victory lap of bingo last summer. It was really fun, but, like, nobody showed up, and I just didn't have time to really promote it as well as I wanted it to. And, you know, you kind of have that moment where you're like, oh, this is done.
Right.
But I'm glad I'd had the extra few, you know, the extra few shows. It was nice to do it again and have a little bit of, you know, memory. Then I thought this year I would, so my job got eliminated at the end of last year. And after I regained my mental and physical health, after 3 years of intensity, started to figure out, like, what am I doing with my life? And I had ended all my Will Clark events, and I didn't really have a job, although I had severance, so I was kind of okay for a while.
Right.
And now I'm in this really weird, weird place, because as I intimated to you off the show, I've picked up my art again. So when I was a kid, I taught myself how to draw, and I had a drawing table, and I had a comic strip in my local paper in Wisconsin for 2 years. And I showed those to the new boyfriend, whom I met in early January, and he thought they were really funny. He asked me to draw him one. He said, "Well, he took one strip. He said, can you just recreate this?" And I hadn't picked a pen in like 30 years to draw, or a pencil to draw on drawing paper. But I still had all my old notebooks and all my old stuff. So I just thought, well, you know, I'll just do this, and it'll be fun, cheap, you know, birthday present. And it became a thing, and it became another thing, and then I started to really, you know, get inspired and get ideas, and about a month ago, I started posting some new strips for the first time since 1981, which is insane to even say that.
Yeah.
And I put them on my non-Will Clark blog, which you're more than welcome to go to and check out. And if you like it, you know, please pass it along and share it via the social media stuff. The website is jumpingforjoy.net. And the four is spelled out. It's not the number four. It's Jumping for Joy. And it's just a little blog, and I posted like five, and there's also a little essay in there. When you scroll down about like how it kind of came to be and you know what's it about. And I'm really enjoying just kind of creating, you know, something that's not porn and something that's not nightlife and not even really necessarily gay. And I don't know, maybe I'll do 1,000 more, maybe I'll do 10 more, maybe I'll never do one again, I don't know. But the fact that I just did five like in a month was really quite amazing. So I'm really enjoying that, and it's a nice, creative breath of fresh air. It's frustrating at times because, as you know, art is not easy, and it
right.
shouldn't be. And so I had to struggle through a lot of stuff, as every artist does, you know, which is all about, you know, it started out as, I can't do this. I can't do this anymore. Oh my God, I can barely do this. Okay, I'm doing it. It's okay. I'm doing it. Oh, wow, it looks so good. Oh, it doesn't look so bad. Why didn't I do this for the last 35 years? And then, like, that's when I fell into depression, like in May and June. I was really in a bad depression, like, for a few weeks, because I had let this talent follow, just, you know, sort of dry up. And I was really sad, you know. And then, you kind of come out of that as an artist, and you just realize, well, better not to waste another day then. So, you know, I'm trying to draw every day, or at least do something with it every day. And meanwhile, I'm job hunting, and boy, has that been difficult.
Right.
I could do a whole talk with you about, like, the trials and tribulations of that. I won't, but I could. It's really kind of a weird time, and this is why I kind of preface all of this, is because, like, okay, so I haven't really worked since, like, the end of the year, although I have not, you know, like I said, they did the severance thing, so, you know, like, I wasn't, like, completely out to lunch. So in this time, I really rediscovered a lot of myself, apart from my Will Clark life and all that entailed. And, you know, along the way, also met somebody that I think is the love of my life.
Oh, yay.
Yeah. He's really awesome. And I just came out of the blue. I have no idea, like, where he showed up. He just, like, sort of literally showed up at my doorstep. So I was a scruff hookup. So he shows up. And, you know, I looked at this picture online and I was like, you know, I'm like, whatever, you know, and I told him this, so he knows. I'm like, whatever, I don't care, just come on over, you know. And then he shows up and I'm like, oh my God, you need better pictures. And then I was like, no, you don't need better pictures at all. Please never get better pictures, you know, just for me. You know, it's that song, I'm Not Perfect, But I'm Perfect For You, or,
yeah,
you know, something like that. And that's totally this. And so it's really lovely, and I'm very grateful for literally every hour that I get to have him in my life. And I've had so many relationships that I am going to just enjoy for the moment. And if it vanished tomorrow, I'd be like, okay, great. I had 8 months. Awesome.
There it is.
I mean, I'd be bummed out, but I mean, you know, I'd still be like, okay, I really, really appreciate it on a day-to-day, him on a day-to-day basis.
I would be really bummed out too. Let's keep going. Let's keep going,
yeah,
with this one. Yeah.
So, you know, I'm doing all this thing, and so I'm doing my art, and, you know, so yeah, you saw the Will Clark Lives and the Will Clark Retirement, because I kept trying to organize retirement parties. I was like, I'm just going to announce my retirement, and I'm just going to put the Will away, and I'm going to fold him up like a box and put him up on the shelf, and then he's done, you know. Then I'm done with Will, and he's great, you know, and that was fun, and I had a great time, and I know all these other people who I'm friends with who have kind of, you know, taken their non-de-porn or whatever you call it, and then, you know, tied that up and put that up in a box on their shelf, and I'm just like, oh, that was a project, that was a character, I'm done. And I had three things that happened, all of which sort of thwarted that, and you know, I kind of got the message, I guess, from the universe, and I really don't like talking up like that because it just sounds goofy, but I really got the message from whatever, from whomever, God, the universe, lima beans, I don't know. But, you know, that this was just not to be right now. For there's something else that I'll do as Will Clark someday. I don't know what that is. But so, you know, sort of Will Clark is still sort of in play, although I'm not really doing anything. I don't have anything planned for him, at the moment. So the moment, I'm just job hunting and enjoying my boyfriend and creating a nerdy little comic strip.
I'm telling you, I'm feeling like there's love, there's art. These are all good things. And transition, which is a really exciting thing and something that we don't talk about nearly enough on this show. I often have my guests give advice about, you know, someone who wants to get started, who wants to focus their energy. And you've already gotten started. You've had this incredible career. And what I want from you, because I think you are uniquely positioned, I mean, I could finish that sentence any number of ways with you, yes, but... I will choose to go in this direction. I think that you are uniquely positioned to talk to our listeners about knowing when it's time to transition to something else. And something that I will tell you personally, I struggle with enormously. You know, we've been doing this show for 8+ years, and I'm always thinking, will I know when it's time to stop doing this show?
You will totally know. Trust me. You don't. If you have to ask, it's not right. You're not ready to be done with it. But there was a moment in 2014. Well, there was moments like in 2000. I mean, there's always been moments. Look, I've done a lot of stuff. I've been a magazine writer. For the industry, I did Cocktails at the Stars for 3 years in West Hollywood. I did Bad Boys pool parties in L.A. and in Palm Springs, and then Years of Bingo and Bad Boys on the Hudson here. Blah 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 blah. And in every case, I was like, I just knew it was done. Like, there was just something that, and for me, I'm also like, I don't want to wait to the moment where I hate it.
Right.
I want to bring it to a nice boil and then serve it and then done. And that's how I would like to do it. And I'm very adamant when people have made, sort of acquaintances have, kind of made a little fun and kind of put a thing like, well, you've retired a couple times. Well, no, I retired events. I retired Bad Boys on the Hudson in 2013. And I was like, oh, 10's enough. 10 of these things was more than enough. And with Bingo, the job was really crazy, and I really kind of struggled with trying to figure out how to do Bingo and the job at the same time. And once I kind of made a decision and I decided on a date, I really felt terrific. And then I actually felt fine about it for about a year. And then I kind of had a little ache and I wanted to do a little bit more and I wanted to geek out and see if that would, peek out and see if, maybe there was more to do. And I did. And I don't regret it. I mean, it wasn't great. It wasn't a great 13-week run, but it was fine. It was good enough. And that's all I really cared about at that point. And even really the job, I have to tell you, this was like the weirdest thing. I mean, the weirdest thing about the job. And again, I love the company and I love everybody I worked with and I love everything I did. But, the transition that they went through was really, really badly done. And so many people got let go and it was just awful. And it was morale was just still really bad over there. And even then, so like about a year ago, I was, kind of got handed a bunch of projects and they were like, okay, so basically for the next 60 days from mid-September till mid-November, you're going to do about 30 events, which I did for the company. And then a bunch of came in along the way. So we were like working 24/7 for weeks and weeks and weeks on a take. And I thought I was going to die. I mean, I was so tired and so upset and exhausted and you're traveling all over the place and, dealing, trying to get the same amount of work done for, less resources within the company. And in my head, I was just like, I got to find a better job. I got to find a new job. I got to quit this before it kills me. And then just at like day 58 of this cycle, I was like, I can just make 2 more days and that's the Thanksgiving and then I will be okay, And that's when they eliminated my job. And I literally was sad. I mean, I was sad and angry, of course, as one is. But I also was like, oh, that's great because I don't have to quit.
Yeah.
Like, if I quit, I wouldn't get severance. But by them letting me go, I get severance. This is awesome. So sometimes the universe kind of makes that decision for you if you don't make it yourself. Like, I should have made it in the summer. Like, in the summer of 2015, I really should have said, this is a terrible place. This has become a real nightmare. It's time for me to start looking. And because I didn't, the universe kind of stepped in and said, okay, so you're not going to leave, so I'm going to force it to leave. And I truly believe, after all of my, sort of sarcasm, I truly believe that the universe works like that. When it's meant to be, it's meant to be, it's meant to happen. And you can't stop it. It may come in a different form, but the universe first gives you a choice or a chance to make the decision yourself. And you can see it. Are you going to go do this or are you going to go do that? And if you just either decide not to do anything or worse, make the wrong decision, the universe goes, okay, well then now I'm going to actually, because this is what I need to have happen. And I don't understand it. I know that there's like the probability of a God, who cares and is aware of every single person and has a plan for every single person. That just seems kind of like really complicated to me and I can't imagine it. And yet, I've seen stuff like that work in my and other people's lives. So, you know, I tried not to question it too much. And, you know, it's, I have to, you know, and again, not to be sort of like, even touching on a bummer, but, you know, you mentioned those people who were really struggling and they made a choice to kill themselves. And, you know, at 52 years old and unemployed and going like, well, I can't go back to doing porn and I can't do this and blah, 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 you know, and worrying that my Will Clark life has actually impacted my way negatively to get a job, my ability to get a job. You know, I can't say that I didn't think about it this summer. You know, there was a moment where I did. It was very sad for me. And here's where I knew I was going to be okay, though, because I called up the National Suicide Prevention Hotline, and I'm like, I'm really surprised, I'm really depressed, and I'm really upset, you know, and I can't get a job, and I'm just really upset. And the woman was like this lovely woman. I think her name was Rosie, and she was from Reno. And Rosie from Reno, that's right, that's Rosie from Reno. Rosie from Reno kind of didn't know what she had hit her, because I was like, here's my life story, Rosie from Reno. And I told her, you know, porn stars, porn, you know, I just gave her the whole, like, thing, like, as if she was on soap. And she was like, the waiter, like, they always, like, Jessica Tate always, like, gave the, you know, the waiter lots of information, and they just kind of, like, freak out, because it was, like, so crazy. Like, oh, yeah, the devil just took over my son's soul, you know, like that kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm telling her, Rosie from Reno, all of this, and as I'm telling her, I'm kind of starting to laugh, because it's like, this is really an insane life story. This is really nuts. This is really insane. And she's like, well, you sound like you've done a lot of good work. And I'm like, Rosie, oh my God, she was really the best that she could kind of do. And by the time I ended the call, I was sort of like, what am I doing wasting this person's time? I'm not going to kill myself. I'm not at that point, you know. But sometimes I think one might have to sort of like make that call to find out that one is not at that point.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know if some of these other guys did do that, but I wish they had, because maybe they could have gotten a different point of view. And I think a lot of our things can really be solved by getting a different point of view. Everything seems really, really big, and especially with Facebook, it kind of magnifies it, you know, right? Because even the small stuff, you know, gets to be like, it's this big deal. And I think it's each one of our responsibility to try to, as best as you can, put everything in perspective. You know, by the time this airs, you will actually know this when it airs. When everybody hears it, you and whomever else will go like, oh, we already know the answer to this. But my time, when we're recording this on Monday, Labor Day, I have a job interview tomorrow for for an LGBT organization that's based on the West Coast. It's not, I don't remember even sending a resume in.
Okay. I like when that happens.
Yeah, but I know I did, because they actually sent my cover letter and my resume back to me as part of like package of like, you know, introducing and getting the,
sure.
getting the setting up the interview via Skype. And I was like, I don't remember even sending this out. So, you know, will it be something? I don't know. But it's actually helped me not quite feel so despondent and, you know, hopeless.
Yeah.
So we'll get some stuff in the fire, and, you know, things will happen. And then, and actually this conversation, you know, you bringing up some of these issues, it's like, oh, I really still do feel plugged into a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
Even if I'm not really plugged into this stuff, I still feel like I am to a degree. So I appreciate that you had brought that up to me tonight in this conversation, in this interview.
Well, this is what we do. This is what we do. First of all, let's direct our listeners. Listeners, stroll on over to WillClarkWorld.com, and you can read all of his musings. Tell everybody the art website again, where they can access that comic strip.
www.jumpingforjoy.net.
There it is. There it is.
Too late. I was too late to get .com. I was very upset.
.net is fine.
But you can get .net. And then there's like five strips, so, and it goes backwards because of the blog, of course. And if you're really, really, you know, like, excited and, like, you know, just have to, like, be a part of this, which I would invite you to do, you can join a Facebook group called The Art of Memo, M-E-M-O. And I think that should get you to the group, and then you can just ask to join, and that's where I post stuff directly. Or I post it first, and it will alert you, with, you know, like how groups do on the Facebook. So, you know, yeah, I really invite everybody to kind of join and have a little fun with me and, you know, see a little bit of a different aspect of the Will you've known at least a little bit through Ken's show.
There it is. Well, let me say this about you, sir. I have to tell you, obviously, I've been following you for so long, and I particularly appreciate following you through this transition in your life. I think that it would be so easy for you to just go underground and I'm just going to figure some stuff out and then I'm going to reemerge and this is who I am. But what you've done is actually put yourself out there throughout this transition in a way, and I hope that you know this, and if you don't, you need to know it right now, that is incredibly inspiring to all of us who have been able to witness it. You know, it really is just fortitude incarnate watching you through this process and not let go of the identity that you had, because the good that you did in the world is immeasurable. I guess you could measure it in dollars, but really just the goodwill and certainly the funds that you raised, and then into this new part where you're going to be contributing to the world in a whole different way. And it's so inspiring to be able to access that journey, and the only reason we're able to access it is because you are putting it out there. So I'm really appreciative, Will.
Wow, that's really sweet, and that's really unexpected. I really appreciate it. I'm grateful for your friendship, and I also grateful for there's sadly been a couple people professionally who kind of like vanished within this time, which I was really kind of upset about. But the really great news and really exciting and amazing thing is that this time has brought out a few people and qualities of a few people that I didn't know it was there. And I'm really grateful to, in some weird way, I'm very grateful for this time, because it really, well, first of all, it brought me a boyfriend, which I've been looking for ages. And I'm like, where has he been? Like,
right.
He knows nobody I know. We have very little, we have a bunch of things in common, like experiences and a few people, but like we've never crossed each other's path. It's like, you know, I went to LA, he got to New York. I came back from LA, he got into a relationship. You know, like it's weird, like when you start matching up the timelines, you know, a little bit, you know. And also, like I said, it's brought some people into my life and back into my life and that I wouldn't have otherwise had, and that's been very beautiful. And, you know, in fact, this friend from Wisconsin who let me know that, like, you know, my family knows, they found out some other way, some way in the past. And, you know, now I'm sort of, like, intrigued a little bit about that and disappointed, but also, you know, my sister sort of rose to my own actual expectation of her as far as, like, what she was going to say and how she's going to handle it. So, you know, but that's fine. That, you know, it's not the end of the world. Someday I'll write a play about them and, you know, make lots of money off of the pain that they've caused me.
There it is.
There it is, art.
Well, look, here's the deal. We might be talking to Will Clark in 2.5 years, whether we're talking to Will Clark, whether we're talking to any other alter ego that he has. There will still always be the energy about you that I so appreciate. So, sir, whatever incarnation we are speaking to you, we just love speaking to you, and you have to know we're wishing you all the best.
Well, thanks, Ken. I wish you the best too. And I mean, it doesn't have to be 2.5 years. So, you know, when I get to another milestone, whatever that will be, I will, you know, let you know. And, you know, we can talk more. Whenever.
There it is. There it is. Will Clark, please keep doing what you're doing, sir.
Thank you.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, not a ton of time left on this week's episode, so let's hit some LGBT news stories real quick. These come to you from Pink News this week. Will Clark mentioned this story earlier in the show. Well, the TV network logo was apparently, quote, blindsided by revelations that the star of their new dating show once worked as a male escort. gay cable channel Logo TV, the home of RuPaul's Drag Race, has commissioned upcoming reality show called Finding Prince Charming. According to a statement from Logo, the show features 13 handsome suitors living together in a house and competing for the heart of a gorgeous prince. But it turns out the prince, Robert Sepulveda Jr., allegedly has a secret past as a sex worker with a profile on rentboy.com. After reports on gay blogs, he admitted to the Huffington Post, quote, "The past is the past. I was young and it helped through college. But what I want people to focus on is who I am today as an entrepreneur, as an activist. I started a nonprofit and, you know, focusing on the show, that's really what I want people to focus on," end quote. He also told Us Weekly this quote, "It's part of my past, and these guys were open with me about their past. Some talked about HIV, about whatever that's happened in their past. They were honest and open with me about their past, so I felt like I couldn't stand before them and not be open about my past." But a source close to the production told one website that the network didn't find out until well into the production. They added that the network followed standard protocol in vetting, but nothing came up during the background check. Again, we are not about slut shaming on this show, but maybe be a little bit more forthright with someone's past when we're talking about these eligible bachelors. Over in South Africa, the South African government has warned a U.S. pastor who advocates the killing of gay people that he could face charges or deportation for hate speech on a visit. Pastor Stephen Anderson, we've talked about him a ton on this show. He is of the Faithful Word Baptist Church in Phoenix, Arizona. He is one of America's most homophobic pastors. In a previous sermon, he directly called for the execution of gay people by stoning, claiming, quote, "If a man also lie with mankind, as he lieth with a woman, both of them have committed an abomination. They shall surely be put to death. Their blood shall be upon them." That, my friends, is the cure for AIDS. It was right there in the Bible all along. This pastor openly celebrated the Orlando massacre last month, telling his congregation, "The good news is that there's 50 less pedophiles in this world." Well, the pastor is planning to head to South Africa this month to convert more people to his extreme cause, but LGBT groups have urged the government to deny him entry. According to South Africa's Independent Online, Home Affairs Minister Malusi Gigaba discussed the issue while meeting with LGBT leaders and the South African Human Rights Commission this week. In the meeting, the Home Affairs Minister suggested the option to block the visit was still on the table. He added, quote, "We have weighed the options available regarding the visit of the United States pastor. We've also considered the letter from the Human Rights Commission from South Africa and the position of the LGBTI community. This is a highly sensitive matter that has to be tackled with extreme caution. If it is his intention to visit South Africa again, it would be in his best interest to behave in accordance with our laws. There will be serious conditions attached to this visit. We will not hesitate to deport or charge him for wrongdoing." That's the South African government issuing a warning to this very not nice pastor. Not a good guy there. A museum in Florida is to preserve a memorial laid for the 49 victims of the Orlando massacre. The Orange County Regional History Center has collected about 3,500 items left outside Pulse nightclub since the atrocity in June. The items that were left in tribute included stuffed animals, personalized notes, and drawings. The center is also going to take a bathroom door riddled with bullet holes as part of its display. Curator Pam Schwartz said the tragedy was a historical event. Michael Perkins, who manages the museum, added that it was still too early to say what they will do with the items, though it was possible it may form part of a planned exhibition on the LGBT community in that city. So we'll keep our eyes on out for that in Orlando. The Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton accepted an invite to have dinner with a transgender 8-year-old whose rights he is trying to attack. The right-wing Republican lawmaker has dedicated much of his career to launching lawsuits aimed at blocking LGBT rights protections. Paxton this year launched a case that blocked an Obama administration directive protecting transgender students in schools, claiming they were a danger to other students in his brief. He also recently challenged an Affordable Care Act provision that ensures doctors can't refuse to treat patients because they're lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender. But despite expending much of his resources and taxpayer money attempting to minimize LGBT rights, he accepted an invite to have dinner with an 8-year-old trans boy and his family. His mother, Amber Briggle, explained this, quote, "I invited Attorney General Ken Paxton to sit down with our family and get to know his constituents and fellow Texans. I am pleased the Attorney General took the time to visit with our family and to meet our son and to have a conversation with our family. We are Texans just like everybody else. My most important job in life is being a mom, and my son and his safety are my top priority. Since the Attorney General has never met an openly transgender child, Adam and I felt that it was important for him to meet our amazing son so that he could put a face to the issue. We expressed to him that it is his job as Attorney General to protect the rights of all Texans, including transgender kids like our son, and we hope that after meeting our family, he will see that those discriminatory lawsuits and actions put our child in danger and affect his ability to succeed in school." Look at that. An invitation to dinner. That is one way you can use your voice. If you have an Attorney General in your state not so LGBTQ friendly, invite him to dinner. Invite him over to your house. The mom said this further, quote, "The dinner table is where we gather to share and celebrate our common humanity, love and family, hopes and worries, laughter and tears," end quote. She even did say this. I will add this. She said, quote, "I'd like to encourage other LGBT families to invite public officials to dine with them. That would be amazing. And I hope those public servants will follow the example that the Paxtons set by so graciously accepting our invitation." There it is. Invite public officials to have dinner with you. That would be incredible. Incredible. Hey, there's another guy you might want to ask to dinner there in Texas. A Texas Supreme Court justice has suggested that same-sex couples should be denied equal access to benefits to promote opposite-sex parents. The claim was made in response to a lawsuit backed by right-wing evangelical groups bidding to stop Texas cities from granting employee benefits to married same-sex couples. In the case, the state Supreme Court affirmed a lower court ruling affirming equal benefit rights, but one justice dissented to argue that gay couples should be denied benefits. Justice John Devine claimed this, quote, "The U.S. Supreme Court ruling concerned access to marriage, not an equal protection challenge to the allocation of employment benefits. The Court of Appeals apparently assumed that if the Supreme Court concluded no government interest justifies recognizing marriage as only between couples of the opposite sex, then no interest justifies offering different benefits to same-sex and opposite-sex spouses of city employees. But as discussed below, marriage, not spousal employment benefits, is a fundamental right." He added this, quote, "Benefits such as health insurance provide financial security as couples decide whether to have a child. An opposite sex marriage," you ready? "An opposite sex marriage is the only marital relationship where children are raised by their biological parents. In any other relationship, the child must be removed from at least one natural parent, perhaps two, before being adopted by her new parents." Yeah. By the way, he's not even acknowledging that opposite sex parents adopt too. They really and truly do. So no, sir, a same-sex marriage is not the only marital relationship where children are not raised by their biological parents. It's just so ridiculous. This is a guy with a law degree. How is he not allowing for all the different possibilities, all the different ways of having children? And so to put out there, I'm sorry, this is the only right way to do it, is unbelievable. It's unbelievable. So there he is, this Texas justice who you guys might want to invite to dinner if you're there in Texas. Texas Justice John Devine claiming that opposite sex marriage is the only way to go because it's the only way that ensures the well-being of the children. It is a very tired trope, but is very much out there. That's all the time we have for this week's episode of This Show Is So Gay. We gave you a new idea. Invite a local official to dinner. What a great thing that would be. Break bread together. Maybe that's something that will make a difference. If you do it, let us know. Send me an email, ken@thisshowisogay.com. Our huge thanks to Will Clark. Go check out willclarkworld.com. He's doing some great stuff over there. And Jumping for Joy, forjoy.net. You guys get out there. Go use your voice the way you know how to use it to make a difference for our LGBTQ and ally brothers and sisters. And while you're out there making a difference, while you're out there using your voice, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?